Chapter 4 Dimensions. In Chapter 3, we saw that pressure-driven flow in a pipe could display different physical regimes for increasing fluid speeds, from smooth and laminar to unpredictable and turbulent. But one might wonder which parameters of the pipe flow actually control the transition. Is it the viscosity of the fluid? Is it the applied pressure? How about the size of the pipe? Clearly, different ways to increase the speed of the fluid exist, and therefore it appears difficult to predict the relative importance of the different control parameters of the problem. When many things matter, which are the ones that truly matter? As it turns out, only one number controls the transition to turbulence. The catch is that this dimensionless number, which we will see is called the Reynolds number, is itself composed of all the other control parameters of the problem. To understand its origin, we have to take a step back and consider the role that physical dimensions and dimensional analysis play in physics. This will allow us to then discover a whole suite of special dimensionless numbers governing the dynamics of fluids. Physical dimensions. All physical quantities have dimensions. So far in the book, we have talked about velocities, accelerations, forces, and stresses, whose physical dimensions can be expressed using the three fundamental dimensions of mass, capital M, length, capital L, and time, capital T. A length is a length. A velocity, or a speed, capital V, is a length divided by a time, which we write as, open bracket, capital V, close bracket, is equal to capital L divided by capital T, where we use brackets to indicate the dimensions of the quantity in question. An acceleration, A, is the rate of change of a velocity. Hence its dimensions are, open bracket A, close bracket, is equal to capital L divided by, open parenthesis, capital T squared, close parenthesis. As dictated by Newton's second law of motion, a force, F, is a mass times an acceleration, so its dimensions are given by, open bracket F, close bracket, is equal to capital M, capital L, divided by, open parenthesis, capital T squared, close parenthesis. Consequently, because a stress, sigma, is a force per unit of surface area, we can equate open bracket sigma, close bracket, is equal to open bracket F, close bracket, divided by open parenthesis capital L squared, close parenthesis. Hence the dimensions of a stress are open bracket sigma, close bracket, is equal to capital M divided by open parenthesis capital L, capital T squared, close parenthesis. Physical dimensions are related to units, but they are not the same concepts. For example, many different units may be used to measure lengths, meters, yards, feet, inches, etc. Changing the unit means changing the way in which we decide to represent the physical quantity in question, but it does not change its intrinsic value. Why should we care about physical dimensions? The answer came from the French scientist Joseph Fourier. Famous for numerous contributions to mathematics, chiefly what we now call Fourier series and Fourier transforms, and physics, notably his derivation of the heat equation, he brought forward an important notion about physical dimensions in his 1822 book on the theory of heat. His idea, now known as the concept of dimensional homogeneity, states that in any scientific equation, terms on either side of the equal sign need to have the same physical dimensions, so an apple cannot be equal to an orange. Dimensional analysis. The concept of dimensional homogeneity might appear to be an intuitive idea, but it has remarkable consequences. It means, for example, that we can only add or subtract quantities with the same physical dimensions. If an equation involves the sum of many terms, every term in the sum needs to have the same dimension. Furthermore, when we try to determine the complex relationship between some control parameters and a quantity of interest, the control parameters can only be combined in a way that is dimensionally consistent with the measured quantity. As an illustration, when we consider the Hagen-Poiseuille law, equation 4, the many parameters that govern the fluid flow are arranged on the right-hand side of the equation in such a way that the resulting formula has the dimensions of a flow rate, that is, capital L cubed divided by capital T. This idea can be pushed further and can sometimes be used to almost solve problems without any knowledge of the underlying equations. Consider Newton's shear experiment from Chapter 2, in which the goal is to compute the force acting on the plate per unit of surface area, capital F divided by capital A, as a function of the fluid and the geometry of the experiment. With two plates separated by a distance h and moving with relative speed, capital U, the force exerted by the fluid per unit of surface area of the plate depends on only three parameters: the viscosity of the fluid, mu, capital U, and h. That is, we assume that capital A is large enough for the ratio capital F divided by capital A not to depend on capital A. The force per unit of surface area has dimensions, open bracket, capital F, divided by capital A, close bracket, is equal to capital M, divided by, open parenthesis, capital L, capital T squared, close parenthesis. And it turns out that there is only one way to combine the parameters, mu, capital U, and H, to obtain the same dimensions. Indeed, we note that only the viscosity includes the dimensions of mass, with open bracket mu close bracket is equal to capital M divided by open parenthesis capital L capital T close parenthesis. So the force per unit of surface area must necessarily be proportional to mu, and with no additional dependence on the viscosity. If not, this would violate Fourier's principle. Furthermore, the viscosity also has the same 1 divided by capital L dependence as capital F divided by capital A, so we need to combine the remaining two parameters, capital U and H, in order to make an inverse time, and the only way to do this is to divide capital U by H. Therefore, using only dimensional homogeneity, we obtain that which can be seen in equation 7. Where capital K is a constant with no dimensions. That is the only combination of mu, capital U, and H that works. The power of the dimensional arguments we used is evident. Without knowledge of any of the underlying equations or physical mechanisms at play, and using only Fourier's concept of dimensional homogeneity, we were able to find the value of the force per unit area up to the knowledge of a constant. Importantly, since capital K is equal to the ratio between two terms of equal dimensions, it itself has no dimensions, and thus is said to be dimensionless. Of course, these dimensional arguments cannot completely solve the problem, and in order to determine the value of capital K, we would either need to carry out an experiment, and a single experiment is sufficient since the value of K is universal, or we would need to solve the equations of fluid mechanics, which would lead to the classical value capital K equals 1. See Newton's law of viscosity in equation 2. The impact of dimensional homogeneity on equations was pioneered by the 19th century Scottish scientist James Clerk Maxwell, one of the most celebrated physicists of all time. Maxwell's name is most famously associated with the equations of electromagnetism and the physics of gases. His work in dimensional analysis includes his proposal of the three fundamental mechanical dimensions, capital M, capital L, and capital T, from which others are derived. Other fundamental physical dimensions exist, of course, including temperature and electric charge. Dimensionless numbers. In a vast array of problems in physics, instead of simplifying the problem down to a single constant, some irreducible parameters always remain, called dimensionless numbers. These turn out to play a crucial role in our understanding of fluid mechanics. To explain this, let's revisit the example of the flow in a pipe discussed in Chapter 3. The pipe has length capital L and diameter capital D, and we impose the flow rate, capital Q, which is equivalent to imposing the mean flow speed, capital U, since capital U is equal to 4 capital Q divided by, open parenthesis, pi capital D squared, close parenthesis. We would like to calculate the change in pressure, delta P, between the inlet and outlet of the pipe. If the pipe is long, The relevant quantity is the change in pressure per unit length of the pipe, since in the laminar regime, the fluid pressure varies linearly along the pipe length. We therefore consider a long pipe for which we wish to compute the ratio delta P divided by capital L. The pressure drop per unit length could be a function of the diameter of the pipe, capital D, the material properties of the fluid, namely its mass density, rho, and viscosity, mu, and of course the mean speed, capital U, of the fluid in the pipe. Consequently, we are trying to determine how the quantity delta P divided by capital L depends on the parameters rho, mu, capital D, and capital U. The way to proceed consists in cancelling out dimensions one by one until all that is left is dimensionless. The quantity we are aiming to determine, the pressure drop per unit length, has dimensions open bracket delta P divided by capital L close bracket is equal to capital M divided by open parenthesis capital L squared capital T squared close parenthesis. So if we divide it by a combination of the parameters with the same dimensions, we obtain a dimensionless number. Using the Hagen-Poiseuille law, equation 4, we see that a combination of the parameters with the same dimensions as delta P divided by capital L is mu capital Q divided by open parenthesis D to the power of 4 close parenthesis, and therefore mu capital U divided by capital D squared. The dimensionless version of the pressure drop per unit length is therefore written as the ratio open parenthesis delta P capital D squared close parenthesis divided by open parenthesis mu capital U capital L close parenthesis, which we will denote denominator delta P for simplicity. The key insight to proceed is due to the famed British scientist Lord Rayleigh, born John William Strutt. Winner of the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1909, Rayleigh impacted countless branches of physics, including acoustics, optics, and fluid mechanics. His intuition about dimensional homogeneity led to a very important point. Consider the dimensionless pressure gradient, denominator delta P, which depends on four parameters, all of which have physical dimensions, rho, mu, capital D, and capital U. Rayleigh's key observation is that a dimensionless quality is allowed to only be a function of dimensionless combinations of other physical parameters. If not, then the value of the dimensionless quantity of interest, here, denominator delta P, will necessarily depend on the unit system in which we chose to write our parameters, which cannot happen if at the end we want to end up with a dimensionless number. Consequently, we need to get rid of all physical dimensions by combining parameters in a way that cancels out their dimensions. If this is not possible, then these parameters cannot be part of the solution. In the case of pipe flow, this can be done in the following way. Of the four parameters on which the dimensionless flow rate, denominator delta P, could depend, that is, rho, mu, capital D and capital U, only two have dimensions that include a mass. They are the mass density with open bracket rho close bracket is equal to capital M divided by open parenthesis capital L cubed close parenthesis and the viscosity with open bracket mu close bracket is equal to capital M divided by open parenthesis capital L capital T close parenthesis. In order for the dimension capital M to no longer appear, denominator delta P can only depend on the ratio between these two parameters, and thus denominator delta P can in fact at most depend on the three parameters rho divided by mu, capital D and capital U. We can next carry out a similar procedure for the dimension of time. The ratio between density and viscosity has dimensions open bracket rho divided by mu, close bracket, is equal to capital T divided by open parenthesis capital L squared close parenthesis, while the velocity capital U is the only remaining parameter including dimensions of time, since open bracket capital U close bracket is equal to capital L divided by capital T. Therefore, to no longer have a dependence on time, we need to multiply both terms, so that in fact denominator delta p can at most depend on two parameters, rho, capital U divided by mu, and capital D. Finally, since we have open bracket rho, capital U divided by mu, close bracket, is equal to 1 divided by capital L, and open bracket capital D, close bracket, is equal to L, in order to remove the dimensions of length, these two parameters must necessarily be multiplied. Our complicated initial problem can therefore be finally stated in a remarkably simple dimensionless form as equation 8. The beauty of the final result in equation 8 is that it is much simpler than the original formulation of the physical problem. The pressure difference between the two ends of the pipe was thought to depend on four different possible physical parameters, which would make it a very complicated problem. However, it turns out that the non-dimensionalized pressure drop only depends on a single combination of all the physical parameters, namely the ratio rho, capital U, capital D, divided by mu. So in this case, only one thing truly matters. Building on the pioneering work of Fourier, Maxwell and Rayleigh, this methodology of dimensional analysis can be used to systematically reduce any physical problem to one whose results depend solely on numbers that have no intrinsic dimensions, called dimensionless numbers. Since there exist three fundamental mechanical dimensions, capital M, capital L, and capital T, in general this allows us to reduce by three the number of relevant parameters in the problem, as illustrated by going from the four-dimensional parameter in the original problem statement for the pipe flow to the single-dimensionless number in equation 8. Reynolds number. The control parameter appearing on the right-hand side of equation 8 is the Reynolds number, arguably the most important dimensionless number in all of fluid mechanics. For a fluid of density rho and viscosity mu, a flow occurring with speed capital U on a relevant length scale capital D has a Reynolds number defined as equation 9. In his original 1883 paper on the transition to turbulence, Reynolds suspected that the appearance of turbulent eddies in the pipe was governed by the combination of parameters in equation 9, which explains why his name is now associated with it. The Reynolds number is the control parameter used to classify a wide range of flow features, in particular, the transition to turbulence in the pipe. Low Reynolds number flows are smooth, laminar, and fairly well understood. In contrast, high Reynolds number flows are turbulent, erratic, and much harder to predict. Since the pressure drop in a pipe flow depends on the value of the Reynolds number, so does the skin friction exerted on the pipe, and so do the parameters in the Darcy-Weisbach equation from Chapter 3. Because the Reynolds number is the one parameter ruling the dynamic of viscous fluids, it governs many aspects of our daily life. The Reynolds number sets the drag experienced by any vehicle moving in a fluid, such as a submarine in water or an aeroplane in air. It controls how a sailing ship can use the wind for its motion, but also the forces experienced by trees in the same wind, and how fast leaves will fall on the ground. The Reynolds number determines the correct working regime of a combustion engine, but also how fast it takes for cigarette smoke to disappear from a room. In fact, the Reynolds number is so omnipresent in fluid mechanics that it is hard to think of a real-life situation where it does not matter. Walmsley number. Many other dimensionless numbers can be used to characterize the variety of ways in which fluids can move. For example, instead of being steady, the flow in Reynolds' pipe could be made to oscillate in time with frequency f. A situation where time-periodic oscillations are significant is the flow in the circulation, where blood is periodically pumped by the beating heart in our network of veins and arteries. In that case, the dimensions of the frequency, open bracket f, close bracket, is equal to 1 divided by capital T, provide a different method to cancel out the dimensions of time appearing in the Reynolds number. Since the ratio between density and viscosity has dimensions, open bracket, rho divided by mu, close bracket, is equal to capital T divided by open parenthesis capital L squared, close parenthesis, we could instead make the dimension of time disappear by considering the product rho f divided by mu, which has dimensions, open bracket, rho f divided by mu, close bracket, is equal to 1 divided by, open parenthesis, capital L squared, close parenthesis. In a pipe of diameter capital D, the term rho capital D squared f divided by mu is therefore dimensionless. In the context of blood flow, this leads to the dimensionless Wormsley number equation 10, named after the 20th century British mathematician John Wormsley. The Wormsley number captures the distribution of flow inside a blood vessel, as seen from patient data reproduced in figure 17. Blood flowing in small vessels have low or moderate Wormsley numbers, and flow speeds, varying parabolically across the vessel. In contrast, blood flows in large arteries at large Wormsley numbers have speeds characterized by a very flat variation across the vessel. A physical interpretation of the Wormsley number in equation 10 can be offered by rewriting it as a ratio of length scales, equation 11. The length L is the typical scale over which a periodic perturbation of frequency F is able to propagate into the viscous fluid in the direction perpendicular to the flow direction. Flows with low Wormsley numbers have capital D small compared to L, and thus the whole fluid is quickly affected by any time variation, for example a variation of the blood pressure. In contrast, when the Wormsley number is large, the value of L is small compared to capital D, so a large portion of the fluid does not feel the imposed time variations and tends to respond with an almost uniform flow magnitude. Froude number. Many flows in our everyday life are affected by gravity, from drinking and crying to raining and flooding. The dimensions of the acceleration due to gravity are, open bracket, g, close bracket, is equal to capital L divided by, open parenthesis, capital T squared, close parenthesis. So in a geometry with a characteristic length scale capital D to the product g capital D has dimensions of a square of a velocity. If the fluid has typical speed capital U, this suggests a dimensionless number, equation 12, named the Froude number after the 19th century English engineer William Froude. The Froude number measures the importance of gravity in affecting the dynamics of the flow. In flows with high Froude numbers, gravity does not play an important role, while at low Froude numbers, gravity impacts the fluid dynamics, for example in the flows of rivers and oceans. The intuition behind the Froude number is that it represents a ratio between two forms of energy. When a fluid particle is moving, it carries with it some kinetic energy. If, during its motion, it is also subject to gravity, then it also possesses gravitational potential energy. These two forms of energy can be exchanged during the flow, and the Froude number captures the typical ratio between kinetic and gravitational energies. An illustrative example considers a large container of depth, capital D, emptying due to a gravity from a small hole at its base with speed capital U. A small fluid parcel of mass, capital M, has gravitational potential energy, capital M, G, capital D, at the top of the container, relative to its bottom, and almost zero kinetic energy if the container is large. When the fluid leaves the container, it has kinetic energy, half capital M capital U squared, and has lost all of its gravitational potential energy. So conservation of energy means half capital M capital U squared is equal to capital M G capital D, which can be rewritten using equation 12 as capital F R is equal to the square root of 2. The quiescent fluid in the container continuously trades all of its gravitational potential energy into kinetic energy of the flow, and the Froude number captures this balance. A situation where the Froude number governs the fluid dynamics is the phenomenon of hydraulic jumps occurring in numerous natural and industrial settings. In this setup, famously first reported by Leonardo da Vinci, a shallow high-velocity flow transitions abruptly, jumps to a different regime with a thicker fluid layer, and much lower speed. This is illustrated in figure 18 for flow in a kitchen sink, A, and at the Burdekin Dam in Australia, B. As the fast flow, characterized by capital F, R, is greater than 1, decelerates, the Froude number progressively decreases, and when it reaches the critical value of capital F, R is equal to 1, the hydraulic jump occurs, a sudden rise in the surface of the liquid accompanied by an abrupt deceleration, after which the flow has capital F, R is less than 1. During the jump, which is often associated with the creation of turbulence and mixing of the fluid, we have a transfer of kinetic energy from the flow into gravitational potential energy of the thicker but slower moving flow. Historically, the Froude number has played an important role in the design of ships, as its value governs the wake and the waves observed on the water surface, which in turn impact the drag experienced by the ship. The classical work on wave drag is due to Lord Kelvin, born William Thomson, an Irish-Scottish physicist and one of the founding fathers of modern classical physics in the 19th century. Lord Kelvin demonstrated that, at small Froude numbers, the wake behind a body moving along a water surface makes a constant angle with the direction of motion, approximately equal to 19.5 degrees. This is illustrated in Figure 19a in the case of a paddling duck. Recent work showed that the angle of the wake decreases when the Froude number exceeds a critical value of 0.5, as illustrated in Figure 19b for the wake behind a military ship. Bond number. On small length scales, the Froude number tends to be small, but gravity can still play an important role, not relative to the kinetic energy in the moving fluid, but compared to the surface tension holding fluid interfaces together. Consider a liquid drop of size capital D and mass capital M in air. The typical gravitational potential energy in the fluid scales as capital M, G, capital D, and with the mass being the density rho times the fluid volume, we have gravitational potential energy of order rho capital D cubed multiplied by G capital D is equal to rho G capital D to the power of 4. Since the surface tension, gamma, is the energy associated with the air-fluid interface, the surface energy of the drop is of magnitude gamma capital D squared. The ratio between gravitational and surface energies is thus given by equation 13, a dimensionless group named the Bond number, after the 20th century English physicist Wilfred Bond. The impact of the Bond number on the shape of drops is illustrated in Figure 20a, showing water droplets of various sizes deposited on a hydrophobic lotus leaf. Small droplets have a small Bond number, so they are approximately spherical, which minimizes their surface energy. In contrast, big drops with large values of Bo are dominated by gravity, and thus they spread in the shape of thin, flat puddles, which minimizes their gravitational potential energy. Further physical intuition can be gained on the Bond number by rewriting it as a ratio of length scales, equation 14, with a new length scale, L sub G, called the capillary length, which sets the critical size for drops to be in the low versus high Bond number regime. For normal fluids on Earth, L sub G is on the order of millimetres, and therefore only sub-millimetric drops, such as those found in the morning dew or on a window pane, remain approximately spherical. Of course, in situations where G becomes small, the capillary length can become much larger. For example, in the International Space Station, the capillary length is larger than the station itself, and water drops of any size remain spherical if unperturbed. The balance between surface tension and gravity has a famous application in the physics of foams. Well known to all drinkers of beers and aficionados of bubble baths, foams are large collections of gas bubbles closely packed together in a fluid. Liquid foams are ubiquitous in cosmetic products, such as shampoos and shaving creams, while solid foams are now used by the construction industry as insulating materials. An example of liquid foam obtained by shaking a solution of soapy water is illustrated in Figure 20b, showing a collection of gas bubbles held together by surface tension and pushing against one another. Because of gravity, the liquid in a foam drains vertically downward. Bubbles at the bottom have therefore plenty of space to minimize their surface area and have spherical shapes. In contrast, Bubbles at the very top have very little liquid left and tend to be polyhedral. The elongated liquid ridges where the bubbles intersect are called plateau borders, and their junctions obey universal geometrical rules. Weber and capillary numbers. In a fluid at rest, the bond number captures the balance between gravity and surface tension. When the fluid is in motion, we need another dimensionless number to characterize the ability of flow to deform the fluid interface. For high Reynolds number flows, this is captured by the Weber number, named after the German engineer Moritz Weber at the turn of the 20th century. Consider a fluid drop of size capital D moving with speed capital U. The kinetic energy of the drop is of magnitude, open parenthesis, 1/2, close parenthesis, capital M, capital U squared. That is, open parenthesis, 1/2, close parenthesis, rho, capital D cubed, capital U squared, while the surface energy is still gamma, capital D squared. The Weber number is then defined as twice the ratio between these two forms of energy. Equation 15. Given that a flow of air can exist around the fluid drop, we could also define a second Weber number using the density and speed of the gas flow, instead of that in the liquid. Many natural and industrial flows occur at high Weber numbers, resulting in interfaces being stretched, deformed, and even broken. Perhaps the most famous example is that of raindrops, as shown in Figure 21a, which can be found in the print version of the book. Drops fall down due to gravity. They accelerate and eventually reach a velocity that is high enough for the airflow to deform them significantly. What started as a compact water drop is stretched into a thin, curved film, which eventually breaks into smaller drops. These drops will themselves also lead to new, high Weber flows when they fall into puddles and create splashes. A related process occurring in industry is called atomization, whereby fluid jets are deformed by the fast flow of surrounding air. Here again, the Weber number is large, so surface tension is not strong enough to hold together the liquid interface, which undergoes a cascade of instabilities until eventually breaking up and becoming a spray of small droplets. The atomization of liquid fuel is an important process in internal combustion engines, while a similar mechanism is also responsible for formation of sprays on the crests of breaking sea waves. When drops are tiny and the flows around them occur at small Reynolds numbers, an alternative dimensionless number is used, called the capillary number, and defined as the ratio capillary is equal to Weber divided by Reynolds, so that equation 16 is given. Instead of a ratio of energies, the capillary number may be interpreted as a ratio of forces, measuring the forces due to viscous shear stresses deforming the drop relative to the resisting forces from surface tension. Droplets at small capillary number are dominated by surface tension and therefore remain nearly spherical, while those with high values of capillary can undergo significant deformation, including breakup. Figure 22 shows the impact of the capillary number on the deformation of a single oil droplet in a controlled extensional flow. A. See also Chapter 2. As the capillary number increases, B, from top to bottom, the drop extends and becomes thinner. The capillary number plays an important role in many small-scale industrial situations where droplets are produced and manipulated, such as emulsions in the food industry, milk, ice cream, and many cosmetic products. Creams, gels. Mach number. While all other flows discussed in this book are incompressible, in some applications, the effects of compressibility can become quite important. This is the case, for instance, for airflow around fast-moving bodies, such as aircrafts and projectiles. The effect of compressibility is captured by the dimensionless Mach number, which compares the speed of the fluid flow, capital U, to speed of sound in air. C. Equation 17. And is named after the Austrian scientist Ernst Mach. In the atmosphere, the value of C depends on temperature and altitude and ranges between 275 and 340 meters per second. Incompressible flows have very small values of Mach and the effects of compressibility start to be felt at Mach approximately equal to 0.3. When the Mach number increases, a sharp transition occurs near Mach which is equal to 1, after which the surrounding flow is faster than the speed of sound and is said to be supersonic. This can happen in gas pipelines, where air can flow at speeds of hundreds of meters per second, and of course, for flows around aeroplanes. Most of us have not experienced this transition ourselves, since all current passenger planes have maximum flying speeds corresponding to Mach which is approximately equal to 0.85. In the 1960s, commercial aeroplanes breaking the sound barrier, that is, exceeding Mach which is equal to 1, were introduced, most famously the Concorde, now retired, which flew with a maximum Mach number of 2. The record remains Mach which is approximately equal to 6.7, also achieved in the 1960s by the US military. When the flow becomes supersonic, an important new feature appears, called shocks. Physically, the speed of sound in the air is the speed at which perturbations in pressure or density to the air can propagate and go away from any disturbance. When the airflow becomes supersonic, the motion is itself faster than that propagation speed, and therefore none of the disturbances created by the moving body is able to get out of the way. This leads to very large changes in pressure, velocity and density over very small distances in the airflow, below 1 micrometer. Shocks were first observed by Mach. In figure 23A, we reproduce one of his famous 1888 photographs showing the shockwave around a supersonic bullet using a technique allowing to visualize changes in air density. Shocks occurring in supersonic flows are also associated with loud noises called sonic booms, which propagate backward and can be heard in a conical region behind the moving body. An example of an everyday sonic boom is the crack of a whip, where the Mach number is about 2. Sonic booms can also be heard at air shows when military planes fly over the spectators. In that case, since shocks are also associated with sudden changes in temperature, water condensation leads to a thin cloud moving with the plane, allowing us to observe the shock. Rossby number. A final dimensionless number allows us to capture large-scale flows affected by the rotation of the Earth. As both the oceans and the atmosphere are very thin compared to the size of our planet, a few hundred kilometres compared to the Earth's approximately 6,400-kilometre radius, their flows occur mostly along the Earth's surface, with very little motion in the direction perpendicular to it. But since our planet rotates about a fixed north-south axis, this means that the perceived value of the Earth's rotation, that is, that projected along the direction perpendicular to the typical oceanic or atmospheric flow, is maximal at the poles and zero at the equator. This is quantified by the Coriolis frequency, F, equal to twice, for mathematical convenience, the perceived rotation at any given latitude. In a domain of size capital D, the product capital DF has dimensions of a speed, so if a flow has a typical speed capital U, this suggests a new dimensionless number, as equation 18, which is termed the Rossby number after the 20th century Swedish-American meteorologist Carl Gustav Rossby. In situations where the Rossby number is large, the effects of the Earth's rotation are not important. This is the case at low latitudes, for example at the equator where F is zero or in the tropics, or for very high flow speeds, for example in tornadoes. This can even be the relevant limit near the poles where the perceived Earth's rotation is the strongest, provided that the length scale, capital D, is small enough. For example, consider the famous case of a bathtub draining near one of the poles. Taking a typical bathtub size of capital D is approximately equal to 1 meter, and draining speed of capital U is approximately equal to 1 meter per second, the rotation of the Earth being about 10 to the power of negative 5 hertz leads to Rossby being much greater than 1. Without a remarkable control of the experimental conditions, it is therefore not possible for the Earth's rotation to affect the direction in which the fluid drains. That remains a hydrodynamic myth. In contrast, when the Rossby number is of order 1 or less, the Earth's rotation plays an important role, as indeed is the case for many large-scale planetary atmospheric and oceanic flows. One of the more remarkable consequences of flows with small Rossby numbers are Taylor columns, named after the British physicist Geoffrey Ingram Taylor. More on him later. In a flow at low Rossby number, the fluid motion acquires a new rigidity in the direction of rotation, so that a body moving in the rotating fluid appears to take with it an entire column of liquid above and below it, as if it were a rigid cylinder spanning the whole fluid, and with no fluid motion in the direction along the axis of rotation. Perhaps the most famous, yet still controversial, Taylor column is the Great Spot in Jupiter's atmosphere.